Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. And, of course, I'm Al Warren. And on the other side of the country, we've got Mr. Rose Martini back.
The man of a thousand names.
Yeah, that's right. Well, when you're running from the law, you got to keep it, you know, real.
That's true. I'm on the lam.
You're on the lam, and you got to keep you never want them to find you.
Right? No. I mean, exactly. I'm in hiding.
Yeah. So this is great. Of course, you've seen that bite we're supposed to talk about with the band of the lead singer urinating on one of her audience members. And I was thinking, geez, you know, when you went to the Monkees and you're into Run DMC and all this stuff, you are missing the best concerts.
I don't know what's happened.
I'm like, you know.
I'm out of the loop.
Yeah, give your head a shake, man. What are you doing?
I know.
Man, this world's crazy. It's going crazy, you know. I'm going to keep hidden for the rest of my life. Anyway, so now we've got another musician on.
Yes.
I think he's quite a bit better than what this band is. I'm not even saying their name. And he's written a new book as well. And we're going to talk to him about the book and his life and everything like that. Now, the book is called Minor Assassin. Sounds like your kind of book. And now the author is here. His name is Jakeem Joyner. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, Alan. quite a funny opening. People are peeing on people. That's a new one. Okay. I mean, I don't do that.
Oh, you see, now this is the way of selling out a show. Right?
Ha, insane.
Well, you know, the thing is, the bottom line on that one, I have to say, is the song that they're doing is just horrible. They're redoing old metal songs and hard rock songs to brass and woodwind, and she sings over it, and it just sounds awful. It sounds like a mess, you know? And I'm thinking, so you do something to attract the whole country to you, and everyone's going to look or hear it, and they're going to hear this song and think, oh, my God, this is awful. you know, if you're going to do that, you better have a good product, you know.
Yeah. Just because you pee on your audience doesn't necessarily mean they're going to like the music. No.
No. I mean, hopefully for the guy, the pee was better. I don't know.
Yeah.
If you're into that. I don't know. It seems rather kind of an iffy thing to do, too, with the pandemic and everything going on. And
my goodness.
You know, people do not. They're always surprising me. I'm never shocked anymore at this. By the time I'm almost 60, and it's almost, thank God, it's almost over. Well, so you're a young, bright. You got it all. You know, you're a musician. You've done really well. You've written hit songs. You do really well touring, and now you're going into writing, or I guess it's your second book. But so. Wow, so you have a lot of talent. You've got it all. Looks, charms, music, writing.
Well,
what are you doing on this show? No, just...
somewhere someone's supposed to be paying me. I'm not sure, but yeah. We can talk about it.
The check is in the mail.
Yeah, check's in the mail. You know, Dave will send it to you as soon as he gets nearer a computer.
All right, yeah. Yes. I accept the... cold hard cash and all kinds of Zelle, PayPal, all of it, you know, just send it on this way.
Well, you know, being such, okay, so you're successful at being a musician. So what made you go into writing something like Minor Assassin? Like that's a, I don't know, I don't want to say a risk, but it is sort of something that's completely different.
You know, I think when it comes to music, because I'm a songwriter and I write the majority of all of my music, and most of the hit songs that have been playing on the radio that people hear on Sirius XM are original songs that I write. But I think there came a time when I just wanted to use more of my imagination. And I don't know if I have ADD or whatever you want to call it. But I just wanted to find another outlet because, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, movies and stories and plots and things like that ever since I was a young kid. I never thought I'd write an entire book. In fact, my first novel, which is Zarya, that was my first book, and that came out 2015, I believe it was. I started writing that while on tour. You know, I toured Russia, and 5 weeks we were there, just touring the whole country by train. And there was these times where it's like before sound check, where you're just, you know, they haven't even built a stage, and you're there. You got to wait an hour or 2 hours, and I'm like, I just started writing stuff, you know, on my computer. And I guess I kept writing stuff. And then next thing you know, I'm like, let's make something of this stuff, right? You know, so and I think it took about 2 years to finish it. And you know, I had no idea how to put plots together, characters, none of that stuff. I was just letting my mind just go, really. Right. And the next thing you know, I'm like, wow, you know, I'm kind of putting something together. And I had someone that I hired who is really good at editing and writing, and take a look at the gibberish and say, we can, you know, I think you should really work on making this a story. You know, so I kept at it, wrote it again, and started to understand how characters work and things like that. In the end of which is Zarya, which is the first book, which is a science fiction, teenage science. I call it teen science fiction. Teenage girl saves the world on another planet with flying drones and skyscrapers and aliens, stuff like that.
But you were playing in Russia. Wow, that's be quite the experience to be performing in Russia, you know. I hear they like people peeing on people there. So. Anyway.
You know, it would be really cold. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. It was very cold there. Gosh, it was the coldest I've ever been. I mean, I've never, if you haven't experienced cold until you go to Russia, I mean, it's something else. And it seems like they continue to move and work and operate in this freezing weather, including taking off in a blizzard. I mean, we took off in a blizzard from Moscow. I was like, there's no way we're flying in this. And they strap up. Yes, you are flying in this. So, well, just a bit of experience.
They probably get used to it, you know.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, but all that stuff helped, I think, with writing. I mean, I said something about being in a strange place with strange language that just, I don't know, fuels your imagination, you know. Touring, there's a lot of waiting when you're touring, you know. So I guess I did have a lot of time when I toured Russia. We went down and toured Japan and a couple other places. So that's when I started writing, you know. But I had been touring many years before I became an author. More recently, my most recent book, which is different than the first book. This first book is more of a PG-13 kind of a story. It's not, you know, it's you're shooting laser beams and instead of real bullets, like in Minor Assassin, right? So it's a different feel. Minor Assassin is where, you know, a teenage, well, actually it's a young boy who, and I don't want to give away the story too much, but through tragedy, you know, he's whipped off to Japan because there was a home invasion and, you know, they killed his parents right in front of him. He's hiding in a pantry at 8 years old. Luckily, he stays in a pantry and doesn't leave. Turns out his dad worked for some really rich Asians. And, you know, some bad things happen. He gets whipped off to Japan. His sister gets kidnapped. She stays in Las Vegas. He goes to Japan, learns language, learns how to fight, learns how to kill, comes back to Las Vegas, and he wants to find his sister, and he wants to kill those bad dudes who hurt his family, and he's only, you know, 15 years old. So the crazy thing is he's doing the job that the detectives are supposed to be doing in Las Vegas, and the detectives are like, you know, who's killing off all these bad dudes? So it turns out it's little John looking for his sister, and, you know, he's hell-bent on revenge, really. So so that's, in a nutshell, that's Minor Assassin.
Well, you read about martial arts. I'm wondering, are you drawing from experience in martial arts, or is it just imagination? I ask because I've done martial arts for a long time, and that tends to end up in my fiction as well.
You know, I've always had a fast. I never really took martial arts as far as I wanted to. I did do Goju a little while. High school, and I did have my teacher, another teacher who was like excellent at Aikido, and it was more personal training stuff, but nothing that went to, you know, black belt, silver belt, first dan, second dan, none of those things. But I just had a fascination for fighting. I love Bruce Lee, Jet Li, Jackie Chan.
Great stuff. And all that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so, but I wanted to put, you know, a Jet Li and a young African-American boy, minor assassin, who's just angry, really. And, you know, the crazy thing about the story is, you know, it's a human trafficking network of Asians that are in Las Vegas that his father was actually rescuing a lot of the girls and a lot of the kids from the human trafficking network. Turns out his father rescued the wrong person. That's why they came to the house and took him in and out, you know. So his son didn't really know about what was going on. All he knew was he's watched his parents be killed. But, you know, in Japan, he learns the language. The people that his father worked for were good. Well, there's two factions. There's the bad faction. These are the human traffickers. And then there's another Asian faction that's actually trying to stop the bad faction. His father worked for the good faction. So, They were the ones who took John in to Japan and taught him everything, you know, that he could learn, and to help them to go back to Vegas to get his revenge and find his sister before she gets sold off. So it's a more of a real story than Zarya, which is more of, you know, on another planet, and a lot of the characters, you know, have tails and ears, and it's, you know, so it's, you know, different feel. For some reason, I keep finding myself writing with the teenager in mind, which I'm not sure what that's about.
Well, you know, we won't talk about that on the air. So. It's interesting, you know, but, you know, writing when you're in a foreign place like Russia, I mean, and I don't know about you, but anytime I'm going around city to city, I like writing that way, because it's a way you feel like you're kind of alone, even though there's like a million people around you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that creates some sort of atmosphere where you can be into yourself and express yourself in writing, for instance, or maybe even music to that you couldn't when you're at home.
Yeah. Yes. You know, I have found that really my creative mind tends to open up when I am in a strange place. You know, like I said, Russia, I don't speak Russian. So you are definitely a stranger there, but it does put you in this zone where you can really dig deep into yourself and come up with things that you wouldn't at home. So I totally agree with that. But even on musically, you know, because I found that you know, writing songs, and it kind of feels the same in a sense that, you know, you're just kind of putting down what's in your head first, and then after a while you start to try to make sense of what you put down, and then you start to think, well, okay, what's this going to sound like for someone who hears it for the very first time, you know, and will it make sense to the listener, you know? And I kind of feel the same way when it comes to writing, you know. You know, when they read this first chapter, they don't know anything about the book, you know, so is it going to catch their attention? Is it going to make sense, you know? So it's really felt the same. I kind of drew from my experience as a songwriter and kind of used the same energy in writing stories. So it's kind of weird. It felt the same.
Well, I wonder, because as a songwriter or a musician, when you put music out there, you're kind of sharing some of your own soul in a way. You're expressing some sort of an emotion or feelings or something, and you're sharing it with the world. And I think that with the book, you kind of have to do the same when you're writing a story. Does that sort of ever freak you out a little, as I guess we say, or kind of, does it, you know, because the world's so social media, like you do something and everyone's tweeting about it. Like it's so, you're exposed to so many more people now.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so interesting, because before I put out my first novel, I had already put out a couple of albums, so I kind of got used to just really sharing my soul to the audience. But when the book came, when I was done with the book and I had the book in my hand and everything was done, it was a bit, there was a little hesitation to press the publish button, or, you know, because it's like, I wonder what people are going to think. Are they going to like it? Are they going to accept it? Or did I share too much? You know, so it's so amazing that even at the very end, when you have your entire book in your hand, that hesitancy, you know, you're real hesitant to kind of put it out there, even though for me, I'm used to, you know, opening myself up to criticism, because I feel like that's how you grow as an artist. And, you know, as a writer, that's how you're going to grow as a writer. You know, let people read it and chew it up. You know, it's your soul. But, you know, if you can manage to, I feel like if you can manage to handle that, that criticism, and, you know, some is good, some is bad, people are not going to like it. It's going to be good for some people. People are going to think it's horrible, you know, and just, you know, maintaining, your drive to write, your passion to write in spite of all that. I think that's, you know, true art, in my opinion.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, being a musician and writing, it's kind of like the same energy, and I was just wondering if you feel that your musicianship has helped you with maybe like the rhythm of language when you're writing.
You know, I think my experience as a writer has helped me, as a songwriter, has helped me more with structure, because, you know, I think had I not put out music, I probably wouldn't be thinking about too much organizing all of this stuff into an actual story, because, you know, the thing is with music and songs, I've got to organize, you know, 10 songs into one collection, which is an album. And I want people to feel something, you know, from the collection of songs, that I'm giving them. So when it comes to writing stories, I think that by doing that and having that experience, I was able to go back and really comb through and edge out the story to make it make sense to someone who's reading it for the first time, rather than just going crazy with my imagination, which is what I do, you know, like in the first and second draft, you know, it's just write whatever. But now it's like, let's turn this into a story, let's make it make sense, you know. So, so I feel like it's the same energy, yeah.
when you write a song, I would think that there's something you want to share with someone. You want something, you want someone that listens to it to get something from it. And do you have the same kind of thing with the book you write? Is there something you're hoping people get? Like if I was to buy Minor Assassin, read it, other than the top line story, is there some sort of thing you're trying to get across to me? Or is it...
You know, some interesting things I wrote in Minor Assassin did have some personal, like for instance, you know, he's a young African-American boy in Japan. No one looks like him, and he doesn't speak the language. So there's all of these different weird experiences that he have where he's out of place. You know, he does something that's out of place. You know, maybe he goes into a shrine he's not supposed to, or he's playing a certain kind of a way. And, you know, that's just not custom, you know, in that country. And for me, you know, having toured and traveled all over the world, I had to learn some some hard lessons about customs in many different countries. And I kind of felt like I was just naturally relaying that into John's character, albeit from a point of view of a boy, you know, who wants to know, you know, where can he get his little video games, just little stuff that would be important to him at the time, and because he really
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Grows up, you know, in Japan real quickly, much faster than had he just been in America, because, you know, no one's there except for him. There's another young lady named June who knows his father, but still, even though she's a close friend, she's from China, and it's just, you know, just a different, you know, and I felt that way before, you know, traveling to countries. So I think I do, you know, even if I'm not planning on doing that in my writing.
So your main character, John, where did you get him from? Like, where does that character come from when you're sitting down and writing? Did you ever wonder?
You know, that's a really good question, because, you know, it's crazy because, you know, John, in the beginning, you know, of the story, it's a really happy life that he lives in. They have a very nice home. They're not worried about money. He's kind of a techie, you know. He knows how to use all types of computer devices, and decking out his dad's car with other little devices and things like that. So he's a smart little kid. I don't know where, because I can't say I was that smart with tech techy stuff when I was 8, that came from. But I wanted him to have a little edge, you know, a little nerdy little boy he was, sort of. And he had a sister named Jayla, and she was older, you know, and he didn't like that she would get a lot of attention for certain things or whatever. But it just becomes so real, you know, when she's taken away and the family's taken away to someone that's 8 years old. You know, what do you do with that, right? Mm. And, you know, it was the best thing that he did for his entire life was stay in the pantry when the Asians were in the and the gangsters were in the house and not move, you know, crying to his own silence, you know, and that's the only thing that saved his life. But I really can't think where I got this character from, honestly.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people say with fiction writers that when you create a character like that, you end up putting a lot of yourself into that character too. So a lot of the mannerisms or thoughts, or you're developing this character in the story, and the things that he decides to do or not to do comes from you in a way.
So yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not sure if I would have, well, maybe I would be. I mean, he becomes really brutal, you know, and that's why the story is more for adults. You know, I'm not sure if I'm as brutal as I wrote him to be, but I gave him the freedom to, he's only killing bad dudes, so.
So how long have you had this feeling that you wanted to kill a lot of bad dudes?
Oh, man. Hey, it's better to feel it than to do it. I felt like I wanted to kill my brother sometimes, so yeah. I mean, right? But I don't. You know, so, yeah. There's that.
When you write John or any of your characters, can you hear them in your head? Do you have an inner monologue? I'm also curious if that's how you write music, if you hear the lyrics and the music in your head before you put it down.
You know, I will say that it's always great if you can hear the music in your head before you start putting it down, because now you have a blueprint or something to work with. A lot of times when I was signed to a major label and I'm pressed with deadlines to get music done, you have to sit there and come up with something. It's like, well, I don't have anything right now to come up with, you know? So, but then there are these times where, a song or a melody will just kind of pop in your head and be like, wow, I can really feel that. So, and then you start, you just try to, like what I do is I use a audio memos recorder just to like sing the melody just a little bit, because I'll forget it. It's like it comes to you, you've got 30 seconds to put it down and it's gone, you know. So when it comes to writing, I think that at least for these the first two novels, so for Zarya and for Minor Assassin, I had a lot of the story. Well, certainly for Minor Assassin, I had the idea of a lot of the story in my head, because I'm actually going to continue Minor Assassin into a series of teenage assassins around the world. Basically, they're killing bad people around the world, but there's different ones, you know. So I'm kind of expanded. That's kind of been in my head. I barely started writing some of that too, because while John is actually in Japan, he meets a kid from Germany who's there, and then another kid from Kenya, and then another kid from England, and it seems like the organization that his father was working for were creating a network of some sort to take down criminals around the world. So I'm planning on expanding that, and that's kind of been in my head a little bit. So I would say to make this very long answer that I just gave you short, yes. I could have said
Oh, that's all right, we can cut it. No, just now when you're doing this, I wonder, you know, when you were younger, did you ever have an issue telling your family that you wanted to be a musician?
I actually never thought I would be a musician, you know, when I was younger. It never occurred to me, honestly. I mean, my first experience with music, I mean, of course, I used to dance to Michael Jackson when I was 8 and 7, you know, because I love Michael Jackson. But I didn't think that I'd be doing anything serious. But there was when I was 11, I remember my mother taking me to this church where they had this really amazing band, and singers that were just singing, you know, just great singers. And the band, really, it was the band that really caught my attention, though, at church. I had never seen people play like that or perform like that, so it made me excited to want to be a part of it. At the first instrument that I started playing was the drums, although, you know, I'm known as a saxophone player. That was my first instrument because I was just fascinated by the guy who was playing the drums at church, you know. And that's really where I started out. And my mother, you know, she encouraged it, you know. In fact, I didn't start playing saxophone, which is my prime instrument, until high school. And my mother, when I graduated middle school, when we went to high school, the first thing she said, you know, to the administrators is, I want him in band, you know. And, you know, they said, what he plays, you know. I said, well, he plays the drums, you know. So I went to the band class, and, you know, the music instructor said that they already have drummers, so if I want to be in a band, I got to play something else. Took me to a band closet and, you know, let me choose an instrument. Turns out the saxophone looked the most expensive, and it looked like it was a bit of gold, and it looked challenging. So I said, you know, show me how to play that.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. So now you're into the writing. And so you want to make this a series.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you sort of have this planned out in your mind? Do you sort of, like, even when you did Minor Assassins, it sort of sounds like you just sat there and wrote as it came and no thought.
You know, I would say I thought about it a little bit, not as much as I wrote, but as far as the series, I've probably been thinking about that now for more than a year, because the way that I want to write it is, like, I wrote John's story as an entire novel. And then I'm going to write another teenager story from the point of view in another country, like Mexico or something like that. Like, there's a young girl in Mexico, and I'm going to write her story, but it'll be a short story. But she's a part of the same organization, and then eventually everyone will come together in some sort. So that's kind of what I've been building in my head.
Oh, got a plan here. Okay.
I just need time. All I need is, like, get more time. If I can get a couple of more hours, maybe I need like 28, 29 hours in a day.
Yeah.
I get a lot more.
Well, we'd all like that, but I don't think it's going to happen, you know. Well, that's really cool. That's really cool. What's your biggest piece of advice for someone that's, you know, wants to be a musician or a writer, maybe? What would you say to someone like that?
Start writing. I mean, you know. It's the first step is, you know, start playing. I mean, you know, you got to decide, you know, if you want to be a musician, you know, if you can get yourself a guitar or something like that, that'd be great. Find artists that inspire you, that you want to hear play, you know, that you listen to. And if you can get inspired by another artist that you really love and imagine their song coming through you, you know, that's where you really find that passion, is through someone that you look up to. And, you know, when it comes to writing, I mean, some people, like, you know, some people write who don't read a lot, and some people write who do read a lot. Some people have their favorite authors and stuff like that, you know. So maybe you can try out your own story, just start writing, really. And, you know, the thing is, a lot of people say, you know, I can't write, or, you know, I never experienced with writing. But, you know, you get better writing by writing.
yeah. Oh, for sure. That's with anything. So you have, obviously, people you look up to music-wise and that influence you or have. And did you have any writers that kind of rubbed off on you, any?
You know, David Baldacci, I love his stories, which is more real world, CIA, FBI kind of stuff, you know. I picked up a lot of stuff when I did Minor Assassin from some of his books. I love Mary Lou. Some of her fiction stories, and which also deal with, like, a teenage kind of a thing too, with a touch of fantasy, but not too much. You know, James Patterson. There are many different writers that I look up to. It's interesting that sometimes they have something different. You know, like it seems like David Baldacci continues to write, you know, in a certain genre. Which is like, you know, the CIA murders, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, which is a different, you know, for me, I can't say that I've nailed down my genre yet. I do know that I like dealing with teenagers. I do know that I like dealing with fiction. I do like, you know, flying cars and drones and you know, space stuff. But then I also like real world stuff too. So we'll see where it all leads me. I got a new series out called Time Lab that I just put out. It's a short series. And I got the first one came out earlier this summer. And Time Lab is a story where a scientist from the past, 2,000 years ago, is building a time machine. And there's a scientist from current day who's a student in college who's also into physics, is going to be working with someone from the past, but he doesn't know it yet. And they, you know, it's just interesting how that story is more of a real world, but it's still science fiction because you can't actually build a time machine.
At least that you know of.
at least that I know. That's true, right? Maybe.
You never know. Well, that's it's all very interesting. You sound like a very creative person, so that's you got a lot to get out there, and so that's really cool. Do you find that the way the world, especially let's say the U.S. in the last 4 or 5 years has been, including pandemic and all of the controversy going on, does it stress you out, and does that affect your music or even your writing?
You know, it used to, but, you know, now I think more recently, especially after the pandemic, I find that, you know, there's this solitude in art. You know, it's just when you're an artist or when you're being creative, everyone else is quarreling about all of these trivial things. And some of it's serious or whatnot, but I kind of feel like it's the music, it's the stories that bring us all together, really, you know, as a human race. Mm-hmm. You know, if I can't speak Japanese, but I can play a song, they can feel me, they can understand me in that aspect, you know?
Right, right. And that's mm-hmm. important, you know, mm-hmm. making connections everywhere you can,
yeah.
You know? But, yeah, no, I was just wondering, because, you know, because if stressful things happen to artists, a lot of times some really good art comes from, you know, their own hard experiences, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's what it is, really. A lot of it is, you know, I mean, for me, even each album had something to do with what was going on in my life during those times, you know. You know, there's an album that was mainly focused around when I reconnected with my father. Hadn't seen him since I was 7. So a lot of music on that, songs like Back Together Again or The Reunion, upbeat songs and stuff like that. And then, you know, more recently I wrote an album called Touch, which is more of a seductive, sexy, lustful kind of record. Mm. You know, so you know, yes, they're about your experiences, I will say for sure.
Well, there we go. You heard it here. So if someone was, which album would you recommend someone buy of yours if they've never heard of you before, which is hard to believe, but if they haven't, what would you say the one album to get would be?
Wow, that's a hard one because, you know, my biggest hit song is on my second album that came out in 2009. However, my Touch album has a bigger reflection of my personality, even more so than the second album. It's hard to say, you know, which album. If I just had to and I couldn't, I would probably give him the album Touch. I would probably say that one, because that one kind of covers a lot of ground for me as an artist.
Well, there we go. You know, that sounds exciting. So, and now, how do you like people? Do you like to interact with fans or people that read your books or listen to your music? And if you do, how do you like to interact with them? Like, what, do you have a Facebook page or do you have a website?
I love interacting with fans, especially as a performing artist. You know, generally after every show, I'm doing a meet and greet. I'm signing CDs and different things like that. People can reach out to me on Facebook or Instagram, and you know, they send a message. I respond to my messages. And when it comes to writing, same thing. You know, I talk with authors. And, you know, we butt heads and or we talk about different ideas or how better to market our books or different things like that. So I'm very open. If people want to follow me, they can follow me at Jakeem Joyner. That's my tag pretty much everywhere. JACKIEMJOYNER. I did create a separate website for only my literature and for writing, joinerbookclub.com, which has, you know, reviews and, my books, obviously. And, you know, joinerbookclub.com, you can connect with me there. Or, but if you want to find out more about my music, just go to my website, jakeemjoyner.com.
And we'll have that all up on the website so that listeners can, get to it in one click.
And, there you go.
Yeah, and I have. I just wanted to ask you. I know this is like a really big question, and but just to encapsulate it, I see that you wrote a book on it. How did you get into the music business, and you know, become such a success?
You know, it's interesting because I was living in. I'm from Virginia, and I moved to Los Angeles. I remember an artist telling me. I was saying, you know, if I want to make an industry, what do I need to do? They said, well, you're going to wind up in New York City or Los Angeles. I already lived in New York and it was too cold, so I chose Los Angeles. you know, and it's crazy. I produced a demo and I was sending out my demo to just like a bunch of people and a bunch of like record companies, you know, solicited material that they really weren't interested in. But I remember one big time manager getting my demo, and he actually called me. He said he wasn't interested at the time, but he said it was good. He said keep doing it, and you know, send us something else. You know, maybe a year, 2 years later. But it reminded me when I was in high school when I was playing for JV and I wanted to be on varsity. And the crazy thing is just because you didn't make varsity doesn't necessarily mean you can't make varsity next year. So what I took that mindset and wrote an entire album called Baby Soul, which was my first national release. And I sent that album complete to the manager. And then from there, he got me a record deal. I think my last job was in 2006. I was working at Target warehouse. And, you know, I actually got fired from there. And the very next day, that's when I was meeting with the big time manager. He had the album. He said, let's remix it. Let's remaster it. Let's get this famous artist on it. Let's get this other famous artist on it. And then let's put it out. And honestly, had I not stuck to my guns and put and just said, you know, okay, it's okay. He turned me down. I came back a year later with something that he really enjoyed. So I think that was kind of the moment when it happened for me, you know. From there, everything, you know, I started performing with, you know, George Duke, Marcus Miller, Ronnie Laws, Gene Karn, Angela Bofill, and I was performing with all of these big-time artists, and I'm just a young guy, you know, I'm like 27 years old, you know, playing with these big-time artists. I was starstruck everywhere, even though I was also performing. I think another artist said, if you're also one of the performers, don't forget that.
Well, that's great. I mean, there you go. From Target to Lady Gaga. Here we go. Well, it's certainly been a pleasure having you on. You know, hope you keep doing well, and your book sounds fascinating. We'll have that up on our website, of course. And, wow. So our guest today, we're talking to him about his new book, Minor Assassin. And it's been a great conversation also about his music. So Jakeem Joyner, thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's been fun. Good talking with you guys. And by the way, I will not be peeing on anyone from stage.
Oh, well, then.
Because you guys told me with that girl, who I don't know who it was, but geez, that's still ringing in my head. I can't believe someone actually did that.
Yeah. Well, I would have went to your concert, but now I don't know.
tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
So you just reviewed that show, that movie, didn't you?
Red Notice. I have a hard time remembering the name, but yeah, Red Notice.
Yeah, that's kind of for some reason the name doesn't stick to me either, but we watched it by accident, and it was okay.
It's okay. That's basically what it is. It's not extremely funny.
No.
It's Ryan Reynolds being Ryan Reynolds.
Right. And that's very Canadian, you know. His cynical, that attitude? Can't you find any similarity with me? He's so much, this is like how half the country is just like that. Like a lot
We'd
of
have
his,
to put you in a Deadpool suit.
Well, it'd be pretty bad looking. It wouldn't look like his. He's all buff, but his kind of, I don't know, cynical, smart-ass attitude is very Canadian. It's a lot of what he does and says just comes natural. That's just how I am too. I have the same sort of thing as him. But anyway, yeah. So the movie was okay.
He seems to play every character now the same with that same cynical comedy approach.
Yeah. Well, he's just being himself.
Yeah.
He's being Canadian.
He's being Canadian.
He is being so Canadian. That's so Canadian to like make fun of everything. Mm-hmm. But
Dwayne Johnson is Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah. You know, I could take or leave Mr. Dwayne, The Rock. Mm. Yeah, I could take or leave him. He's just kind of like he's like the Arnold Schwarzenegger of the modern time, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I could take him or leave him. It's not a big deal. But but the movie was okay. I mean, you can sure tell.
It's watchable.
Well, yeah, and that's mainly because of the production.
Yeah. Yeah, it was slick.
Yeah, but they know how to do that. You know, it's amazing when you've got money behind something, how you can make it a better movie than a lot of the ones that are out there that are, you can tell, aren't made that good. And
yeah,
and they don't really have the acting people in there that could put on that sort of show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, it's okay. And it looks like there'd be more than one.
Yeah, they did leave it open for a sequel. So yeah. People who liked it enough, I mean, I guess I'd watch the sequel.
Well, yeah. With all the stuff out there now, it's kind of one of those things that wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
But it's not an all too important movie, that's for sure. It's not it's not something that you can't go without.
No.
You know.
That's true.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.